double take, critical, sometimes confrontational, but always amusing conversations about movies. Double Take is a cinema classics production produced by John DeSando and Johnny DiLoretto. I'm John DeSando.
I'm Johnny DiLoretto.
And we do have a classic director, don't we?
We have our work cut out for us.
I really do.
We're going to talk about Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah.
Because his new film, Licorice Pizza, in theaters now, topping a lot of the year-end best of lists. If not at the top, it's consistently been named. And I got to ask you, number one, is it on your best of the year list?
It's going to be on my top 10.
Okay.
It's not my best. I wasn't hot about it when I saw it because I thought it was going to be. I thought it had me just a little bit flummoxed. I expected maybe something more Wes Anderson-like than Paul Thomas Anderson-like. How about you?
It's the one thing that Paul Thomas Anderson continues to do is surprise.
Yeah.
His movies each have a very unique feel and texture to them, as did this one. He has worked in the past with some of the greatest actors in Hollywood history. Daniel Day-Lewis, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
And so here he is doing something, you know, really light, and it feels light. It feels airy and breezy and set in the 70s, you know, and he's got an obvious nostalgia and love for the period and place of the movie. But it's the cast is headed up by two unknowns.
Right.
And unprofessional actors. Philip Seymour Hoffman's son, Cooper Hoffman.
Yep.
And then this young woman, Alana Haim, who is like in a rock band or something.
Right, she's a band leader, yeah.
She's a performer. But all told, at the end of the movie, I'm enjoying it. I'm smiling. I love the little observations and whatnot. But after the end of it, I think I was left a little bit cold.
Well, he's had a fascination with the valley. The San Fernando Valley, and Magnolia comes to mind immediately.
Right.
And I think he captures something of the spirit of that time.
He does,
for sure. Yeah. And I wanted, as an aside, you're reminding me, his favorite contemporary actor is Bradley Cooper.
Okay.
Okay, and...
how do you know that?
Reddit.
Okay, he said that.
Yeah.
And yet this is the only time they've really worked together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's only in it for this little...
But, you know, Seymour Hoffman, of course, was one of his favorites. So it's his favorite.
And he's worked with Joaquin Phoenix twice.
Boy, he has, yeah.
Inherent Vice and The Master.
But he said that he would love, this is a direct quote, "Well, I'd really love to work with Robert De Niro because he's still the most talented actor out there."
Wow.
Huh?
That is really interesting.
But this is your thesis. The guy's all over the place. He's got interests everywhere.
He's a really fascinating director, especially let me segue into this part of the conversation. Do you recognize this filmmaker as one of the great American filmmakers of the last 20, 25, 30 years?
Yes. I think if you give me 10 slots, I think he's in there.
Yeah.
Does he have the Spielberg, Scorsese heft? I don't think so.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think he's light. He's good at light. However, all of a sudden I'm thinking of his There Will Be Blood.
Yeah, There Will Be Blood.
Right.
What about The Master?
Yeah, and The Master. Yeah, right. And so right away, I'm confused as to who he is. I can't get the identity down.
It's interesting, right? He creates these very unique experiences, and that's what they are to me. That's what they feel like. Paul Thomas Anderson films, and to your point, I do think he's one of the great contemporary filmmakers, but I don't have quite as visceral and fanatic a reaction to his work as I know a lot of movie lovers do. And yet, I can sit back and just marvel at his ability to build scenes. I always kind of admire filmmakers wherein when you're watching the film, you know that the camera was thoughtfully placed there. These people are moving through this scene in a thoughtful way. They have been, you know, there's purpose to the shots. There's purpose to the composition. There's purpose to the blocking of the actors and so on. And I feel that with him. And it's a joy to watch his films. They don't always necessarily, like you said, like, you know, knock me out.
No, but you know, I was thinking of Michael Curtiz. And how you know between Captain Blood and say Casablanca or whatever, that you can't quite get a fix on him, but you know he's had some of the best movies ever made. So
yeah,
but I don't have a characterization.
Such a different, there's such a, you know, Michael Curtiz, I think a lot of people would argue was not an auteur the way this guy is. Michael Curtiz was a director for hire who would take on any kind of genre picture and make it sing. This guy sits back very carefully in between films, thinks about what he's going to do, writes, you know, he usually writes and or adapts his own screenplays and then directs them. So he's an auteur in the grandest sense. Where do you think Licorice Pizza fits in overall in the PTA oeuvre?
You know, good question. I think it's, if I took the four that I know best, which would be this one, Phantom Thread, there would be Blood and Magnolia. I think he's not at the top of that list.
Say that again.
If I took the ones that I, of his, that I remember best.
Yeah. This one is not on
this
that.
Is not the that, this is not the top.
It feels like just a trifle, right?
Yeah, well, it does. And only because their lives are kind of trifling, but he has the same kind of protagonist in this as he even has in There Will Be Blood. These are go-getters. This kid, Gary, is it? I forget what his name is now.
Cooper Hoffman?
Right. Gary. Yeah. The kid is a 15-year-old dynamo.
Yeah.
He's going for it. And here's this girl who isn't traditionally beautiful, but is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
What a lovely woman she is.
Yeah.
And he goes for her.
Right.
And
he is not any
oh my God.
Great shakes in the looks department either. What? Very normal looking guy.
I know, and I love Anderson. Close-ups, the guy's got pimples. He doesn't bother.
Right.
The girl has a Romanesque nose, you know, and she, and then you look at her in full form, and you look at the way she carries herself and her smile. I mean, he has one illustration, almost a cartoonish illustration, of where she's holding everybody in her hand.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit of an idealized vision of her.
Yeah.
But it still is alluring.
And I noticed some of the promotional artwork for the movie.
Yes.
And it echoes that period and that time, which I love. I love those hand-colored, hand-drawn posters from
good
the
one.
70s.
Yes.
And they did always sort of embellish what was happening, you know, like in the movie. It was an almost comic book kind of illustration, an enlargement of the themes and the vibe of the movie. And I noticed the artwork was doing that,
I
love.
I mean, he's certainly, and do you think he's certainly seen Once a Time in Hollywood?
He has, you know, and we'll talk about this on more on Double Take.
Good.
But I did want to talk about his growth as a filmmaker, and I recently rewatched Hard Eight, which was his first film.
Oh, Philip, whatever his name is.
And I got to tell you about that because it's a great entry point into both his skills and his themes. Okay, so Paul Thomas Anderson, Licorice Pizza, in theaters now.
Yep.
One of the best movies of the year. Maybe it's up there in my top 15, maybe, but I don't know if it cracks the top 10.
Okay.
You're listening to Double Take, critical, sometimes confrontational, always amusing conversations about movies. We are midway through there's a lot of work when you're talking about somebody like this. Paul Thomas Anderson. Talking about his filmography vis-a-vis Licorice Pizza.
Okay, so we were talking about earlier about the in fact, we have a couple of neophytes as the leads of this film.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm interested in, you've got a seasoned veteran, what you thought of Bradley Cooper's imitation of John Peters.
Yeah. Well, you have Bradley Cooper pop up as John Peters, and you have Sean Penn pop up as a sort of William Holden-esque.
Jack Holden. What do you want?
You have these heavy hitters show up. In stark contrast to these newcomers.
Absolutely.
And I think I've heard Paul Thomas Anderson in an interview talking about why he chose these performers. He didn't want anybody who was seasoned. He wanted to capture, you know, this innocence.
Yeah, yeah.
And I get it.
Me too.
I don't know. Does it work for you ultimately?
What does work for me is that it's a relief to see Bradley Cooper, for instance, playing this manic Peters and realizing that he is going over the top, but that he easily does it. He does it with charm. And these kids, these younger leads couldn't begin to I would even call the Cooper's nuanced, you know, yeah. In other words. So I think that he achieved it.
If Anderson is doing that on purpose.
Oh, I gotta think so. Don't
but you? To what end? What are we supposed to take away from?
Well, I think
the performances, the contrast.
Good question. I think it lends gravity to the film. I think up to that point, you got two of us cynics sitting there and saying, yeah, okay, I got a bunch of scenes here with cute kids. You know, what am I getting? And then all of a sudden, Cooper shocks us into the fact that, you know, an actor like that can do almost anything. And because I remember John Peters' infamous, notorious a persona from that age,
right.
It's a good one.
Yeah, and I guess it does stand to reflect to create a sort of refraction, right?
So yeah, good.
You have this guy who's so cynical and so bombastic and toxic, right? And then compared to these two young, beautiful kids who are just trying to survive in the world, juxtaposed with their skills as performers. Right?
Yes, right. You're right.
Somebody like Bradley Cooper can just slide right into this snakeskin. And these kids who are just kind of left gawking at him.
And you got to love Sean Penn riding the motorcycle.
That was fun. And it's fun to see Sean Penn turn up in a comically overblown
way. Very good point. Right? Yes. I was so happy to see him because the guy usually depresses me when he's on the screen.
Yeah.
And this one was really funny. And she's kind of just mesmerized by this star.
Yeah.
And he's evidently reprising some motorcycle movie or something
that he did. Right.
And so
I do want to jump back. I mentioned before about Heart 8. I want to jump all the way back to his first film.
Oh, do it.
And so I rewatched this recently. And I remember having seen it and liked it when it first came out and not being particularly blown away at it, just knowing like, oh, that was cool, little indie picture from the early 90s. And rewatching it, I was struck by how assured he is as a filmmaker. The opening of that movie is so quietly yet powerfully stated and shot and performed. That you know, now with the benefit of hindsight, you look back and you think, wow, this guy knew he was laying down a gauntlet to other younger filmmakers. It's very simple, no flourishes, no camera flourishes. Just John C. Reilly sitting outside of a diner. The camera pushes in on him as Philip Baker Hall enters the scene. They have a really interesting exchange in the diner, all done in a really effective shot, reverse shot conversation. And the writing, the camera, the dialogue, it was all so wonderfully done. And I thought, wow, and this guy is now just has mastered this art form.
But what he also has mastered is the art of recruiting promising or accomplished actors.
Yeah.
The two you talked about, John C. Reilly and Philip Paul Baker, two memorable character actors. In fact, I don't know if he picked Baker off of Seinfeld or Seinfeld when he played the library detective.
Yeah.
Which way it went.
Right.
But the guy is memorable in the tough guy role that he plays.
And I'm glad you said that because the one thing about Paul Thomas Anderson, and you'll note this anytime you hear him in an interview, is he doesn't talk like one of the greatest filmmakers. He doesn't sound like that. He brings no mystique, no ostentation, no obsequious, performative kind of ramblings about, the greatest. He seems like this regular guy. And I think that is embedded in his filmmaking. So like Punch Drunk Love, it was such a it was such a surprise to us at the time.
Yes.
Right? That he was going to cast Adam Sandler.
He loves Sandler.
He loves him.
I know.
And he takes it very seriously. And that's why you end up getting one of the great Sandler performances in that movie.
Yes, yes. And you know, I had a similar response in the sense that Sandler, Sandler in a serious movie, that, you know, what am I going to... Then I've seen Sandler in a few of his movies, and I've come to really appreciate the guy.
He's really kind of extraordinary in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Oftentimes the movies, as you noted, are ridiculous.
Yes.
They're absurd. It's hard to take them seriously. And yet, I find, and I have become a Sandler fan, I find that even in the most absurd films and situations, he will do this little tiny thing to invest a character with humanity or, you know, pathos. It's, he can really get there, even when he's being silly.
Oh, listen, watch him with kids. He's brilliant. But then do see him in Uncut Gems.
Yeah.
And then you will.
You know, a great Adam Sandler double feature would be Punch Drunk Love and Uncut Gems.
Yes, it would.
Which, by the way, that's another interesting thing you bring up. Uncut Gems, which was directed by the Safdie brothers.
Yeah, and he's in the film.
Benny Safdie plays the politician.
Yes,
here.
He's gay and he's wonderful.
Right, yeah. And that whole segment of the film felt very Scorsesean to me. A lot of that, it felt like the early scenes of Taxi Driver with Cybill Shepherd working for the Palatine.
And reminded me of Robert Altman in some cases, you know, like Nashville even.
Yeah.
You know, so he had some of that. That's great. That's, so I'm beginning to like him even more now.
And that's what I wanted, the tie to, you know, the film he did right after Hard Eight, which really grabbed everyone by the lapels, was Boogie Nights.
Oh, Boogie Nights is the one most people remember.
Boogie Nights and Magnolia.
Yeah.
And those two movies bear such a mark of Scorsese on them in terms of the way they're shot, the editing, the pacing, and stuff like that. And back then, I found it hard to take, you know?
Yeah.
But it feels like he has effectively, he's distanced himself from that. I did notice one very Scorsesean shot in this movie, but it felt more now as a nod, right? Like, I have grown from this, and I have my own style, and my own vibe, and and I felt like the Taxi Driver references were hard-earned.
Oh, I know. So, Licorice Pizza, really strange title, huh? I mean, there's no reference to it in the film.
Right.
And I have discovered where it came from.
Okay, well, I don't know, but let me just take a guess and you tell me if I'm right or not. I want to say, and maybe I did hear something. I don't know. I haven't read about this at length. Anyway.
Okay.
I want to say that it's more about the vibe, that it's just evocative of, you know, much like the characters, bringing together two very different...
Two very different things.
To make something unique,
a
unique pairing. But it's more about the evocation of a time, place, and a feeling.
And is exactly my feeling about it. It had the contradictory elements in Licorice and Pizza, but it also was the name of a store that sold vinyl records in early 70s in Southern California.
All right, so it serves both purposes.
Yes, so it does.
As a very specific... place and time. Very cool. So, let's wrap up.
Yeah.
What is your favorite Paul Thomas Anderson movie and why?
Oh, boy. My favorite Paul Thomas Anderson movie is without a doubt There Will Be Blood.
Okay.
And that's because Daniel Day-Lewis always mesmerizes me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always breathless after having watched a performance of his. And because I think Anderson has an affinity for this kind of go-getter character.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it is. The rest of them are curiosities to me and some really good stuff, such even Phantom Thread, which again has Day-Lewis.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm always attracted to that. And I will remind you that he has directed 8 actors who have been nominated for Oscars.
For his films?
For his films.
Okay.
He has directed 8 of them who have been
nominated. So he's directed eight actors, 2 Oscar nominations.
2 Oscar nominations, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So again, he really has an affinity for and a real talent for picking out actors. And I think that's one of his real strengths.
Yeah, and I do wonder what would have happened with this movie if he had cast.
Oh, yeah.
Actors.
There
were moments in the film where I thought, I think we're maybe losing the full oomph or impact of this scene because they, especially I think maybe Cooper Hoffman, didn't know how to get it.
Yeah.
Didn't know how to elevate it or lift it. And so it kind of, it's left like a deflated souffle in oftentimes.
Great.
You know, but then there is that added charm of him not being able to manipulate the scene in that way, you know. So it is a very interesting experiment. I don't know if it always succeeds.
Well, as we always do, we try to give some of these little pieces of trivia that may help in our own discussion. The first one is his favorite film of all time.
Paul Thomas Anderson's favorite film of all time.
Now, you can't possibly
But I'm curious.
All right.
Let me guess. I'm going to say The Apartment.
Yes, that's a great. The one that he says is his favorite is The Treasure of Sierra Madre.
Okay.
Aren't there, I can't think about how many we've talked about who have said that is listed in their favorite movies
the
of all time.
Sierra yeah, Madre, Treasure yeah. of Sierra Madre.
And I would like to flesh out what we said here. The 8 actors whom he has directed.
Yeah.
Burt Reynolds.
Okay. Oh, that's right. He got a supporting actor nomination.
Julianne Moore.
Okay.
Tom Cruise.
Okay.
Must have been for Magnolia.
Magnolia.
Yeah. Daniel Day-Lewis, obviously, twice. Joaquin Phoenix, as you mentioned. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Amy. What was he nominated for? Oh, The Master?
Yes.
Okay.
Amy Adams.
For The Master.
And Leslie Manville.
Huh. For, what was that for?
And I don't know. It was a supporting role.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it might have been in The Master, but I'm not sure. Anyway, I really like his affinity for good actors. I love the way he played them in Licorice Pizza.
Yeah, and I wonder if this movie will have a life after, you know, if people will find it. I feel like, as we've discussed ad nauseum here, you know, audiences, Spider-Man has become the first and only movie in 2021 to gross $1 billion at the box office. And other more adult fare like The Last Duel and West Side Story have flailed, you know, almost embarrassingly. And I wonder if PTA's acolytes will seek this out, support it. It is definitely worth seeing on the screen.
Well, here's some advice.
Yeah.
I recently was kind of neutral about Don't Look Up.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm always tough on comedies anyway.
Yeah.
And it bore up much better my second viewing.
Oh, you watched it twice?
Yes.
Why did you watch it twice?
Because we're doing it this week.
Okay.
Because Kevin and I are doing it. And I needed to see it again, and boy, did that make a difference to me.
You know, I watched it, and I had heard some bad word on it, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Heck yes.
I think in some ways it's important.
Oh,
you know,
check the boxes.
Right. And it is fascinating to think, to lay that concept over our current reality.
Oh,
and
yeah.
to wonder how similar the circumstances would be if we were facing the same fate.
Yep. Yep. And so therefore, my advice is for me and for maybe our audience, let's take a second look at Licorice Pizza. Don't eat it, because it doesn't sound good.
Go to the theater and look up.